This hour of the Mike Salk Show is powered by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Well, I think we're having a good time. Alongside Michael Bumpus, Mike Lefko with you. Still got the energy going. How are you feeling right now, Bump?
We're good, man. Second win. Been up since 4:30. Let's go.
You can't get a second win yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Not? Are you going to need like a third and fourth win then?
No, I'm good after the second win.
Second win's all you need. That's elite athlete kind of stuff. I'm still trying to chug along on my first win here, but we're having some fun on a Wednesday filling in for Mike Salk. Great lineup on tap. Still plenty of good guests coming up. 7:45, Paul Moyer. At 8:30, some Apple Cup talk with an old teammate of Michael Bumpus, Jerome Harrison. And John Clayton at 8:45, and Matt Hasselbeck from 9 to 10, as he does every Wednesday on the Matt Hasselbeck Show. But we were talking about the Seahawks and some tensions between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, and if that has been maybe a cause or a concern this year, because they're 3-7. They have not been 3-7 since 2009, so this is literally unprecedented in this era of Seahawks football with Wilson, with Pete Carroll. So when you have a situation like that, when there already had been some simmering discontent this offseason, you have to wonder, Bump, is this just a one-year blip? You know, a lot of good teams suffer that one down year. I couldn't think of a team that has had a run like the Seahawks have had. You know, like 10 years of almost unprecedented, no bumps in the road, smooth sailing through a regular season. And I was trying to think, I couldn't think of a team that has undergone a stretch like that. So is this just a one-year hiccup? Or is this the beginning of more significant cause for concern?
It could be a one-year hiccup. It could be. What, in 2017, they didn't make the playoffs. They bounced back, and then Pete Carroll wins, what, 9 games, 10 games, 11 games, 12 games. And then they kind of figure things out. It could be, or it could be the end as well. That's the thing about football, is that every week you have time to digest and dissect everything that has happened. So right now we are dissecting and digesting, what, 3 straight losses or something like that? And there's lots of reason for us to think that, okay, this could be foreshadowing for the end when it comes to the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson era. Now, if they turn around and win a few games and DK goes for 120 and Lockett goes for 100 and a touchdown and Russell looks good, his demeanor's back, he's Mr. Unlimited, then we're talking about, all right, what can they do to build off of this? You know what I mean? So there are different scenarios here, and we literally have to take it week by week, because you never know. Now, if Washington football team on Monday Night Football puts a spanking on the Seattle Seahawks, then that conversation gets even deeper. And you can't sleep on a Washington football team, man. They're playing good football right now, too.
Yeah, we will get into that, too. I mean, this is a team now that looks really solid. They look like the Giant Slayers that they almost were last year when Taylor Heinicke almost beat the Bucs in the playoffs. I mean, the Washington football team, they're balling right now. So they look good. They have come off of 2 wins against the Bucs and the Panthers. And we'll dive into that game a little bit more with Paul Moyer and certainly at 8 o'clock and then with Matt Hasselbeck. But I'm kind of looking at the Seahawks right now. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, not the most popular guy around here, certainly around most of the people in the NFL or even his family. I kind of like, you know, speaking of that, all right, I'm going to veer off topic here. We were talking about Thanksgiving, right, and how it's so fun to be around families. What do you think an Aaron Rodgers Thanksgiving consists of? Because his family doesn't like him.
His wifey's family.
Yeah, I guess, but now, you know, his new fiance seems a little out there.
Well,
but
she eats clay, right? So I would assume the menu's interesting.
Clay turkeys?
Yeah, he does Friendsgiving. Friendsgiving.
Does he have friends, though?
I'm sure he does.
Yeah,
he doesn't like just walk around by himself all day. I'm sure he's got like got to have 2 or 3 guys you can hang out with.
He's a critical thinker. He might do his own thing. But yeah, Thanksgiving might be weird in the Rodgers household. Yeah, his new best friend, Joe Rogan and Aaron Rodgers. But I kind of was looking at the Seahawks bump, and you can kind of maybe compare it to the Packers in 2 ways. I mean, the Packers, they have been to 3 of the last 5 NFC Championship games. They went in 2016. Then they had 2 down years. And that did precipitate the breakup. I mean, that was it for Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. But there also was a lot of tension after the Packers drafted Jordan Love. Remember how mad Aaron Rodgers was?
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I'm not playing for these guys. And that's kind of stewed over 2 offseasons. And yet, Here he is. He's playing great. The Packers look good. They've had great records this year and now last season. So we know Russell Wilson's frustrated, and this season hasn't gone along with what he envisioned. Certainly not what any Seahawk envisioned after a 12-4 year. But can they keep it together and bounce back kind of like the Packers did when they go through all this drama with Aaron Rodgers? Yet there's Rodgers still playing for them and still leading them to wins. Is that something that this dynamic is strong enough amongst the Seahawks that they can do that at the end of this year and then, more importantly, into next season?
Well, what happened in the Rodgers situation? He got rid of his head coach.
Yeah, and, I know. So you can look at it two ways.
You know, and that I think that's why he is where he is now, because he got a chance to start all over. And you have to be, how much drama is the Seahawks organization willing to deal with? Are they willing to deal with Aaron Rodgers type drama to where you're demanding new guys come in? I'm not going to play for these dudes. I can't, I'm not going to mentor this Jordan Love that you guys drafted. And are the Seahawks able to roll the dice and say, all right, Russ, we're getting ready for you to leave? Because once you bring in a young gun and the writing's on the wall, you know, stuff gets real. So it's all about, okay, is Pete Carroll going to be here? And is Russell willing to be okay if they draft another young guy to replace him? But, you know, if they lose, if they continue to lose this year, they will be in a position to draft a quarterback. Thankfully for Russell Wilson, it's not a great year when it comes to college quarterbacks.
Well, what's interesting is Greg Rosenthal was on with Jake and Stacey yesterday, and he was asked about this because it's a major concern right now. It's a big issue, not just here in Seattle, but around the NFL, if this is on the horizon. And he said, you know, it's easier to replace Pete Carroll than it is Russell Wilson.
I think Pete Carroll's easier to replace, ultimately. I mean, they've been amazing, and you hate to talk about that because I just think he did one of the best rebuilding jobs in the history of the NFL, and what he did defensively for those 5 or 6 years is unparalleled. But he's a defensive coach that's had a mediocre to poor defensive team for about 5 or 6 years now, and he hasn't struck the right balance of picking the right offensive coaches. Not that they haven't been efficient. They've been pretty good. Russell Wilson has his flaws too, certainly, but it feels more just as an organization where you reset is more either front office or coach.
Is that what's going to happen? Is that the split that's going to happen? And is it easier to replace Pete Carroll?
It's always easier to replace a coach. It's not easier to replace a Hall of Fame quarterback. And let me say this, Pete Carroll deserves a lot more respect than what people are giving him right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is a tough time in a relationship. Like, you get in the tough times and you forget all the other things that happen, you know, all the other good times, you know. So, but yeah, in real life, it's easier to replace Pete Carroll. He's just older. He's 70 years old, you know. He's not going to coach very much longer. I would assume this is his last stop. Russell Wilson, you would assume you still got 4 to 5 good years in him. It's definitely easier to replace Pete Carroll. I just want to reiterate, you 12s that are hating on this man, it's not easy to find a guy who can just change a franchise the way Pete Carroll did.
Yeah, look how many coaches the Bears have gone through. Or yeah. The Browns. I mean, there's always that joke that they hold up the Steelers organization and say, yeah, the Steelers have had 3 head coaches in the last 80 years. The Bears have had 20 head coaches in the last 10 years. That's exaggerated a little bit. But it is hard to find a winning and capable coach in the NFL. So at some point, it just becomes, is it too much for this group to get to that next level? You know, they've been winning. But if you're not winning the ultimate goal, then it comes down to, sure, I guess a breakup is necessary. But that's going to have to come from the highest level, right? I mean, this is Jody Allen if she's going to make a move, if you're going to get rid of Pete Carroll. Is that who it falls on? Is it going to have to be something of that highest order if the Seahawks get rid of Pete Carroll?
Yeah, it's going to be Jody. It's going to be Schneider. And it's going to be Pete. And I think Pete is honest with himself. And I think that he would want out of a place that is kind of nudging him out. I don't think he'd want to hang around and be like, no, I'm here. You know, this is my job. I'm going to finish my contract. I mean, I think Pete is a very logical type of dude. But I think right now he's not thinking about that. I think right now he's thinking about how the heck are we going to beat the Washington football team? And, you know, the NBA says it's a miss or make league. NFL, man, it's a week-by-week league. You know, his press conference could look a lot different than last week when he walked out on it and then came back. You know, I think he walked out of frustration. It can look a lot different. But, yeah, it starts up top. It starts up top, and I think Pete Carroll would kind of see the writing on the wall if it came down to that.
Yeah, winning fixes everything. Unfortunately, there just hasn't been proof over the last couple of weeks, we've just had no evidence to kind of back that up, because every week, even games where you think, okay, this is winnable against the Cardinals' backup offense, no DeAndre Hopkins, no Kyler Murray, they're not doing that. So it's understandable that everyone kind of jumps to the end saying, well, if the Seahawks can't beat that team, realistically, who are they going to beat? But as you said, I mean, it's week to week. How many crazy things have we seen in the NFL each week with bad teams beating a team they have no business winning a game against?
And the Jags beat the Buffs.
Yeah.
Buffalo.
Held them to no touchdowns.
Yeah. It's just how this works. People fall in love with a logo and think it's automatic. You know, like, oh, man, it's the Patriots. They're automatically going to win. It's the Jags. They're automatically going to lose. Now, chances are they probably are going to win and lose. But they got some All-Americans over there as well. So, yeah, take your time. I mean, between Sunday and Saturday, yeah, we can critique. You know, we can throw scenarios out there. But we have to wait and see what it looks like on Sunday and what these relationships look like and kind of get a feel on that.
Yeah, that's a very important kind of you can hold two separate ideas at the same time. And it's not just one or the other. It's not just, yes, right now, fire everyone. It's, okay, things do need to change if the season doesn't progress like it should from this point onward. But there are 7 weeks left. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's see what the Seahawks do this week, the next few weeks. And if there's significant progress, then they perhaps deserve the benefit of the doubt. I understand that that's tough because it's an immediate reactionary business in the NFL. Fans are so invested, and I am, in certain teams. So I get it, and I understand that. But right now, because of what the Seahawks have done in the entirety of Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll's tenure together, they do deserve a little benefit of the doubt. But we'll see, because if things start to continue to dovetail the wrong way, then, you know, I'm not sure how much, I'm not sure if it's salvageable at all. I mean, kind of what you were hinting at, if things win, yeah, but it might become very obvious that something is amiss if these losses start to pile up even more.
Man, they got a Washington football team, Niners, Texans, and the Rams coming up. You got to win two or three of those things. If they lose two more games to the Washington football team, the Niners, then I think this conversation gets a bit more serious.
Yeah. Here's what's interesting, too, and I'm not sure how much I agree with this, but it is a former quarterback talking about another quarterback. Chris Sims says Russ would really kind of benefit and be surprised by what he sees if he goes somewhere else.
He doesn't even know what he doesn't know. Right. Yeah. He doesn't even know what he doesn't know. He doesn't. Like, if he went to New England with Brady and company, he'd be like, what? Wait, that's what you guys are doing here? That's what you've reading? That's what it is? Like, oh, wait, so you're playing this play? Oh, like, there's yes. It's been beginner-level offense from since he's been there. 100%.
Beginner level, really? So you want to make things more complex? I mean, I don't think that's the issue right now. Do you think the issue is that it's too simple?
I think at times it is.
Okay.
I really do. I think that when it's time to take a shot, if you want to push the ball down the field, you must occupy defenders. How do you occupy defenders? You line up with more receivers out there. You leak the running back out the backfield. You take care of flat defenders. You hold safeties. You open up the middle of the field. If you look at the Green Bay Packers, I think they are one of the best teams at doing that. It's amazing how often Devontae Adams gets open in the middle of the field when everyone knows he's going there. You know why? Because they're occupying defenders. I think with the Seahawks, when two-man routes going deep, one on a deep cross, one on a post, man, those guys aren't worried about that. They're going to have two safeties over the top, and everyone else is going to take care of everything underneath. So at times, it needs to be a bit more sophisticated, I think. Short game, I think they do a decent job of the short game. They got guys at different places. They got options for Russell to get the football out of his hands. So, yeah, there are always ways to get better. I think that's the next step. But that's where I come back to, okay, the evolution of Shane Waldron. Eventually, is he going to get to that? This guy's first time being in this situation. So you got to kind of be patient with him as the season goes along.
Do you think that Russell Wilson has that patience with him? Because he seemed very frustrated after last season. And when the offense went stagnant, there was no fix. There was no, where's the bailout for Russ? Why is he holding it so long? There's no receivers open. There's nothing to do. So they bring in this guy that was supposed to really revamp the offense. Now, things are the same. Russell Wilson, again, has to scramble around. No one's open. There are no guys to throw to, or he's not seeing them. Or like you were kind of hinting at, they don't run the route combinations to make it easier for him. So is there now some frustration on his part saying, oh, well, here we go again?
There has to be, but didn't Russell have a say in bringing this guy in?
Yeah, that's, I mean,
they didn't just say, okay, Russell, this is going to be your guy. I'm sure there was a process during all this. So, yeah, I'm sure Russell's frustrated. Waldron's frustrated. They better all be frustrated in that building. Like I said, if you're walking around with not a care in the world, eating at the lunch table and having a jolly old time with your buddies, then something ain't right. So everyone's frustrated. And it's all about communication and bringing ideas to the table. And that's another big thing. Yes, Shane is the offensive coordinator, but you have to rely on your assistants. Assistants have good ideas as well. You know, you got to rely on your quarterback. Quarterbacks have good ideas. The chemistry, man, the chemistry just seems off. It seems like, you know, there's a fast break and no one's running with each other. Everyone's just waiting down the other end of the court to see if one guy can make something happen for this ball club.
All right, it's 7:15. Let's get to Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
All right, I waited. I made sure it said up first. So up first.
Making progress.
I'm learning. We got a couple more hours to fix it as well. Well, unfortunately, a promising rookie season comes to an end. Trey Brown was hurt to start the year. He came on strong when he made his appearance for the Seahawks. Was such a godsend in that secondary. Really stabilized the cornerback position, but he undergoes surgery to repair his patellar tendon and a couple of other tears. I mean, that's some high-level medical terminology there. The important thing is it's a six to seven month rehab process. Bump, it's just tough to see out of a guy that really was playing mature beyond his years. He did not seem like a rookie kind of in his comments off the field and the way he just immediately jumped into things.
Now, Trey Brown, that's a big hit for this football club, especially with DJ being banged up last week. You had just high expectation for this guy. Plays with a lot of intensity, plays with technique, plays with maturity. Unfortunate.
Yeah, it really was impressive. We got the chance to speak to him a couple of times, once when he had gotten drafted and then about a week or so ago. And his process and the way he's able to recognize plays, it just seemed so high level. I mean, he was talking about the 4th-and-2 stop against the Packers, and he broke down, all right, well, situationally, I knew what Rodgers was trying to do, and so I knew he didn't have time to go to this guy. I knew they hit the sticks, and so I had to jump that route. And it just seemed like a guy who had been in the league for 3 to 5 years. And this was one thing where, you know, the draft class, such a small class, it had been panned because Stone Forsythe hadn't done anything, and D. Eskridge has been hurt. But Trey Brown, that was a hit by far. A really, really good-looking pick, and now it's a tough break for this secondary. But I'm impressed with him. I think that's going to be a good pick and a good player for years to come.
Old soul.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, so we have a name on a guy that the Mariners are potentially in on. MLB Network's John Morosi and 710 ESPN Seattle contributor John Morosi reports that starting pitcher Kevin Gausman has been linked to the Mariners, but also the Blue Jays and the Angels. Plus, the Giants want him back. Now, the 30-year-old's pretty durable. He's pitched over 250 innings each of the last two seasons. Bump, is this a guy they need to get, or do they have to make that big splash for a starting pitcher if this is indeed the offseason where they're going to go for it?
They got to make a splash. They have to make a splash. You cannot rely on that bullpen to save you as often as the Mariners' bullpen did. Hey, go ahead and get Kevin, man. He's durable, like you mentioned, man. He averaged 5.8 innings per game. Guys just don't do that these days. You want him to go 7. That's just not how the game is. That's a good start, man. 5.8. I say, man, go holler at this dude.
Well, I think it might be a bidding war, though. You think the Mariners are going to get into a bidding war with some teams?
I don't know,
man.
They
have to, right?
Yeah, they have to, but they're cheap, man. They're like my Uncle Larry, man. They're cheap out there.
They might be. They've been saving up for this offseason. Let's hope they have some extra cash lying around and they can outbid a team like the Blue Jays or the Giants.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Top-ranked Gonzaga looks like an undefeated team in the making once again. Big week of college basketball for the Zags. They'll take on Duke and star freshman Seattle native Paolo Banchero on Friday. But last night, they just destroyed second-ranked UCLA. Final Four rematch in an incredible game that went to overtime in that Final Four last season. This time, it was 83-63. Really could have been more of a blowout. I mean, they're loaded. They have so many guys on that team. But, Bump, I was impressed with 7-foot freshman Chet Holmgren, 15 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 blocks. He's got gangly limbs. He's just flying all over the court out there.
Guy takes 2 dribbles, and he's on the other side of the court. The thing that impressed me about the Zags, how do you recruit to Spokane? Spokane, I got love for you. I spent some time out there. But you're getting ballers to go to Spokane. Whoever's in charge of recruiting over there and building that culture, tip my cap off to you.
Yeah, he's from Minnesota, Holmgren. So to go all the way, Chet Holmgren's from Minnesota, to go all the way out here to Eastern Washington, when I'm sure he has never heard of Spokane or really has no familiarity with the geography of the Pacific Northwest. No offense, Justin. I don't think he probably knows where Montana is either.
I'll be in Spokane today. I'll wave to Chet.
Yeah, wave to Chet. Go stop by practice. Well, actually, they're in Vegas. But to have a kid from Minnesota,
you know, still see him from there.
Yeah, they recruited internationally so well for so long. I mean, I guess it's status right now. They've established themselves as a preeminent program, kind of going along what we can talk about when we talk some Apple Cup. You know, Washington has been struggling with that image. They think of themselves as one of the premier Pac-12 programs, but they just haven't been able to get dudes, either nationally or within the city of Seattle. Gonzaga, I mean, they're a team now, and they can go and they can pick anyone from all over the country.
Zags, time to win the Natty. Come on, let's go.
That's really what it comes down to, right? It's that or bust, which,
yeah.
How unfair is that of an expectation?
It's not unfair.
No?
They're one of the best in the game. Every year, they're one of the best in the game. It's about, I mean, we have to raise expectations for these guys, man. I think it's time.
Yeah,
I hope they get it done.
What's funny is that, yeah, an undefeated season last year is almost like a failure because you were 31-0 and then lost.
Yep.
So if that happens again, I mean, is it almost kind of a Seahawks situation where, all right, I'm sick at 12 wins because what are you doing in the postseason? That you can't really enjoy winning, which is strange to think about. But, yeah, Gonzaga has set an incredibly high standard. They have to at least get back to the national title game and probably win it all. But you know what? That's a good problem to have, right? I mean, we're talking about the exact opposite right now, and it's a little painful to talk about a 3-7 Seahawks team where before the biggest problem was, why aren't they winning in the first round of the playoffs?
Yep.
Now it's, hey, can we just get to the playoffs?
Please.
So we will see what develops with Gonzaga, but that's what you need to know. Gonzaga dominated UCLA 83-63. And then I had mentioned it in the 6 o'clock hour. We don't have to talk about it again, but soccer happened. The Sounders lost in the playoffs. Sorry, Justin. They lost in penalty kicks. Yeah, it happened. It was a playoff game.
PK,
they lost.
I was saying, I was like doing the thing in your bed where you have the phone sideways and you lock the screen orientation, you know, so I could try to just watch the end of it. I was like, I got to be up at 4 a.m. Let's get this game over with. And it was like, okay, overtime. And it was like, oh, no. And it was like, okay, PKs. I'm like, oh, that's right. The playoffs are the worst for soccer.
Yeah, we were talking about that. Bump, what time did you have to try to duck out last night? What time did you try to hit the pillow?
Man, I'm usually a midnight type of guy, but I knew I was going to be up early, so I dipped out like around 10:30.
Yeah, I was trying to kind of follow that game. I mean, everyone was tweeting about it. I was like, yeah, I should pay attention. It's a big deal right now. We got 34,000 fans there. And then it was 9:15. I'm like, oh. It's getting late. Gotta wake up in a few hours. So I woke up to all this discontent and consternation on the Twitter timeline that they had indeed lost. The Sounders lose in penalty kicks. So that's what you need to know. It's the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jafco Plumbing. Michael Bumpus, Mike Lefko in with you. We are here until 10 o'clock. We have Matt Hasselbeck in at 9 o'clock. He'll be in for the hour on a fun little Wednesday and some other guests coming along. But coming up next, there's going to be no Mariners reunion for one guy that could have been a good piece to add back to the bullpen. We'll talk about that next. The Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Oh, I hear we have a familiar song.
Nice.
What is this? What's the connection here, Bump?
What? Lefko, how old are you, man?
No, I hear you have a connection to it.
Yeah, I know, but do you know what the chorus of this song is?
No.
Oh.
Were you born like 93, 94, Lefko?
88.
88? Oh, 88. Goodness. It's Bump, 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 B2K, man. Bump, Bump, Bump.
Ah, this makes sense why it's your touchdown song. Okay. Yeah, I needed to get to that chorus. That's why.
Well, it was the instrumental, so you would. Yeah.
Right. And then that makes sense. We can't actually play that song, but
also a little disrespect to B2K. I'm gonna need you to get caught up to speed on the B2K catalog.
Okay, so here's the one issue, and here's where the show takes a drastic turn. I was telling Justin this, Bump, before we came on. You know, my music knowledge compared to Mike Salk is infinitely less. So they have their music conversations, and they can just catalog through any kind of song Justin will throw out there. Mine is like, yeah, what's on the radio right now? Or like back in the day, the pop punk when I was growing up. So I could do that. If you give me some 41
toe-to-toe
or pop
some punk.
Some Boys Like Girls or Bowling for Soup. But any of that stuff, like I'm not good on that. So
all right.
That's the downfall. But that's a great song and it makes sense. So I'm sure all the Cougars fans heard that often during your days there. That's a good one to bump back into. What were we talking about? We were talking about Kendall Graveman. But I had something else that was kind of funny. So we'll talk about Kendall Graveman. Kendall Graveman, he's not coming back to the Mariners bump. He signed with the White Sox, and we'll kind of get into what that means and how that trade played out. But how about this? Justin was doing some research during the break. You know, Bump, you were mentioning that Chet Holmgren, you know, he looked really thin. He doesn't have a lot of pounds on him. And I was like, nah, he probably weighs a lot. He's 7 feet tall. Justin, how much? What's the poundage there on Chet Holmgren?
7 feet tall, 190 pounds.
That's crazy. I'm 190, 5'11".
At a foot and an inch.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, Chet Holmgren. Well, he's 19. He's a freshman. I mean, he's going to put on the weight. But if that's the one knock on him, then dang, that guy's going to get a ton better when he improves and gets some NBA weight on him. Remember Kevin Durant? He was too thin. I'm doing the quotes for the people not watching the screen. But Kevin Durant couldn't even bench press whatever that weight was. And, well, he's like, I play basketball. Why do I need to be strong? Why do I need to be yoked like that? So, yeah, Kevin Durant's fine. Chet Holmgren's good. I think they'll be fine. But it is funny because I'm like, yeah, all right, I almost weigh that much as well. But
for,
yeah.
For reference, KD is 240. 6'10", 240. This guy is 7 feet, 190.
Yeah, but KD in college was that thin.
Oh, okay.
Like, he was at Texas, and he was really thin. That's why
Slim Reaper.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he has that nickname, is because he was a beanpole. So he put on the weight. You'll put on the weight, too, when you get your own, like, personal chef and everything like that. This kid's eating. You know what you ate in college, Bump. I mean, what do you think this kid's eating right now? He's eating Taco Bell and not eating enough for all the workout he's doing.
I don't know, man. It's a different game now. When I was in college, we ate Taco Bell and all that garbage. But nowadays, you know, nutrition is on a different level. So they got him on a weight game plan. I guarantee it he's on a weight game plan.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chet Holmgren, we will not weight shame him anymore. I mean, it's impressive. That's what it is. We're just impressed that he's that good and he's only 190, 7 feet 190. So good for the Zags, good for Chet Holmgren. But Kendall Graveman. Great Mariners closer for the first half of the season. They traded him in a very heated outcome. It turned out it almost, what we learned, split the Mariners clubhouse up as Kendall Graveman was traded for Abraham Toro. But Kendall Graveman signs a 3-year, $24 million deal with the White Sox. So is this proof that the Mariners won the trade? I mean, you weren't going to pay 3 years, $24 million for Graveman, right? So is Jerry Dipoto now sitting back content saying, yeah, all right, I do know what I'm talking about?
I think it worked out. DePoto's sitting back like, yeah, we knew we weren't going to spend that type of money on this guy. You get Toro out the deal. We all know what he did for the Mariners, really helped this team offensively. So it all worked out. That's why you have to kind of trust the vision sometimes. Like, it might not make sense in the moment. You know, it's like when you're a kid and my mom's like, I'm 14 years old. I'm like, Mom, I want to go out. I want to do this. She goes, listen, man, you don't want to do that. Just trust me. Wait a few years and you'll understand why. In this sense, it didn't happen in a few years, it happened in a few months. But then you look back at it, you're like, all right, well, it makes sense now. It just didn't in the moment. And you almost divided a clubhouse. That was not a popular move there.
Yeah, we were on air when the news broke, and it was just a stream of texts. Just sheer anger. And Dave and Bob were furious as well. And we were sitting there like, what are they doing? This is, of course, the timing. They beat the Astros in this thrilling win, and now they're trading the best closer. Jerry doesn't know what he's talking about. And then Toro hits that grand slam off of Kendall Graveman. And our guy Dave Wyman comes in the next day and says, if I'm DePoto, do I go out to the mound and just flash middle fingers all around the stadium? And we're like, nah, I don't think he's going to do that. I think, you know, it's just his job and he's doing it. But I think it worked out because you developed two great bullpen guys in Casey Sadler and Paul Sewald. Those are lockdown solid closers. And obviously, you weren't going to get Graveman back. So the Astros paid all that for half a season. Plus, you got rid of Rafael Montero. That goes under the radar. Everyone disliked Rafael Montero. They took him as kind of baggage along the way. So you got some money saved. You got Abraham Toro under team control. And do you think a move like this, kind of what we were talking about with the Mariners saving up, now, do they have the money and the resources to go out and really spend it all on a big name like Marcus Semien? Everyone's been clamoring for him. Well, you have the capital now. You have that cap space, and you have the money to do it.
If I'm DePoto, Could you imagine the his best friend, whoever that is, his best friend in the whole world, could you imagine the conversations he's had with him? Like, man, these guys in Seattle don't know what they're talking about. I'm the man. I'm DePoto, man. I got this done. But now, yeah, now you save some money. Now you have to make a move. Now, if you go out there and you go bargain shopping, you know, you go to your local Goodwill, which you can find some gems at the Goodwill. I'm not hating on the Goodwill, all right? But you got to go out and you got to spend some money and say, look, we won 90 games this year. This is what we were missing. You're missing an ace on the mound to get things done. You go out and get that piece. If not, it's just going to look like all this was for nothing, and you're going to lean on your bullpen again to play just tremendously.
I love the thought of Jerry DePoto referring to himself in the third person, going around saying, I'm DePoto. at those GM meetings or when he's having his pitches to the free agents, he's like, yeah, you know, you should come to the Mariners. I'm DePoto.
DePoto.
That's how he walks into the house. You kind of do, right? You have to recruit these guys. I mean, I'm sure you had plenty of coaches walk into your living room trying to recruit you to go play college football for them. And the Mariners have to do that. And they kind of have to do it with some urgency because there is that lockout looming. So it certainly helps when you have that confidence. And Jerry DePoto now can point to that and point to all the cap space he has and the team is on the right path. But if he went in there and said, I'm DePoto, and if that was the selling point, I would love that even more. But, yeah, it's a situation where, baseball does not have a salary cap. The 253 is correct me. Sometimes you talk for a while and you wake up at 4 in the morning. And what I'm saying is they have space. They have salary space compared to previous years. But the good thing is that the Mariners seem like they're on the right track. And we heard Ty France on earlier, and he is talking about selling this team. What he would pitch free agents on. And Logan Gilbert, a couple of days ago on with Jake and Stacey, said that as well, that everyone on this team seems on board with that also. I know that move to trade Kendall Graveman at the time angered a lot of people in that clubhouse, but now, what we were saying with the Seahawks, winning solves everything. The Mariners improve from that point on. They are on the cusp of something great, and it seems like, more importantly, every player is on board with trying to sell this organization to free agents.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, right? Listen to Ty France, J.P. Crawford, the leaders in this clubhouse. And unlike what we're hearing from the Seahawks, right, we're kind of hearing the same messaging from the Mariners. Like, look, we're one or two moves away. We're young. We're here to compete. Everything sounds really positive. So DePoto's done a great job of relaying his message through his players, and naturally they relay to us in the media game. But again, if no big moves are made, what does that do to the mental of the clubhouse? You know, how do these guys view this next season coming up? I know they're always going to go out and compete and be the underdog and overachieve. That's going to be their mission. But let's not overachieve. Let's just do what you're expected to do. So if you get guys on this roster who you expect to take you over the top, man, it's a beautiful situation. When's the last time the Mariners have gone into a season and they're like, yes, playoffs or bust, let's go get it? I mean, I've been on this side of the mountains for 18 years.
Like, I would say like 2000 maybe. Yeah. Is that when it was? And then 2001, they had the terrific season. But I do like the thought of DePoto rolling in there saying, I'm DePoto. And oh yeah, have you met my boy Ken Griffey? So he can pull out Ken Griffey Jr. as a kind of closing piece there.
Yeah.
And the Mariners are in good shape, but you're right. They got to do something now. I think the expectation has unfortunately been built up so high that only a set couple of names will satisfy this fan base. And rightfully so. I mean, we expect it. The space is there. The opportunity is there. And the timing is there. So it might be Marcus Semien or bust. And, kind of like Gonzaga. Perhaps artificially high expectations. But, yeah, we will see what happens there. All right, so usually I know we have Brock Heward in. That's not happening. It's just a day of fill-ins alongside Michael Bumpus, Mike Lefka with you. And coming up, we're going to have a little Seahawks reunion. Paul Moyer in for Brock Heward. He will join us next. The gang's getting back together. Paul Moyer coming up next. This is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Heward says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Yeah! 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 Wow, I'm listening to all that and it's glory. All right, so none of those people are here. No Brock, no Salk. Instead, we're throwing an audible. Some are saying we have a better group in Michael Bumpus, Mike Lefko, and we had to balance out the offense with a little defense Paul Moyer joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Paul, I don't have a big flowing introduction for you. I'm sorry, but how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Let's see. Mike Michael Moyer.
Ah,
I like it.
Well, we thought that was
the
criteria for filling in. We thought, all right, you know, someone has to fill in for Mike Salk. Oh, hey, you guys have names Mike and Michael. That's the same. All right, you guys can fill in. So we're having a good Thanksgiving. I mean, we talked a little bit about it. How are your Thanksgiving plans? Are you getting ready for a big day of sitting on the couch?
I am. I love this time of year, though. You know, Michael, and I don't like to think that we're fill-ins, by the way, but, you know, as Michael knows, you know, this is a big, big week for high school football. And, you know, some aren't sitting on the sides. They're practicing, getting ready for semifinals. And I know Michael is against Kennewick this weekend. And as Michael knows, Bellevue is going to be playing is it Maryville Pilchuck, I believe? Four great games. So I love this time of year. I love Thursday. I love how they roll it into Fridays. I mean, this is 4 days of football. I mean, this is a great week.
Hey, Moyer, speaking of football, Trey Brown, man, he's out for, 6 to 7 months. I know that was somebody we were both really high on and excited about. Who fills in now, and what did you see last week from the fill-ins?
Well, I mean, yeah, first of all, let me just go with Trey Brown. It is a bummer because he was really starting to kick it up. And we saw his playmaking ability, his confidence. And it also just goes to show you, you know, there's a couple positions that you do need to invest into, at a higher level in the draft, and that's corner. It's just too important nowadays. And you got to be able to play man-to-man in – you know, we haven't drafted high in so long. And so just to see Trey Brown that he played the position all through college and at a high level, we're definitely going to miss him. But, you know, I think Sidney Jones, you know, he was playing beforehand and he played well last week. He got that one interception, unfortunately, called back from him that didn't count, that should have counted because it certainly looked like he had possession of the ball. So I think we'll be fine. And, you know, we've been playing better in the secondary. But those, unfortunately, defense and the corners probably aren't the biggest issue right now with the Seahawks.
Yeah, now is there some concern that even though you have some guys that could be solid, bless Austin, well, Pete said he fought through it. He did decently out there, and then Sidney Jones really played nicely. But after that, what do you have? You know, you really don't have a lot there. You have John Reed and Gavin Heslop, and is there some concern now that you're getting really thin at cornerback?
Well, at 3-7, I'm concerned about everything. But we are thin. I liked a lot of the guys that played in preseason that were young, and you know, Heslop's one of them. Some people just need an opportunity in a game, and Heslop is definitely an athletic guy that he looked good. And this is the time for these young guys to shine. They're going to get opportunities. You know, I'm hoping the Seahawks go on a bit of a roll here. And you know, when you hit rock bottom, and really there's no way to go but just relax and go play. Just play football. You know, and then all of a sudden you get these young guys that have gotten the opportunity, and, you know, you start looking at them going, okay, they are playmakers, and we've got something to build on for next year. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot going on in the offseason in the secondary, but there's some youth there that I think can make hay with that opportunity.
Hey, Moyer, this is a interesting time for the Seattle Seahawks. They're 3-7. Looks like they're not going to make the playoffs unless something crazy happens. There was some drama during the offseason with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. And earlier in the show, we talked about, you know, could this be the end of a great era? You know, and my approach is you got to take it week by week. You don't know what's going to happen next week, the following week. What's your overall feel between the relationship between Russ, Pete, and the organization as a whole when it comes to sticking together?
Well, they're all rumors, you know, obviously. I mean, Russ has a contract. They could control Russ for 3 more years if they really want to. And I think they're going to want to. The relationship's good. It's just, man, there's just a lot going on there. I watched the game Monday night, and I think a lot of people did when Tom Brady played against the Giants. I think it was Monday night. And I think everybody was looking at Tom and the offense that they're running and thinking, oh, that's what Seattle's offense needs to look like. And I'm watching Tom, and I think, I mean, again, there's a lot of tweets, so people were thinking the same thing. You know, just the precision of what he does and the quick game. And I was looking at how he did it, and I said, you know, I don't know if Russ could do that. And it's not that he doesn't want to. It has to do with height as much as anything. And, again, it's not that you can't run quick game, you know, being shorter and under 6 feet. But when I saw pressure coming at Tom Brady, Tom looks to throw over it. You know, if he sees a different colored jersey right in front of him, he looks short to long. And so if you take away the short and he has time, he'll extend the play downfield. But he's always looked short to long. And if you have pressure coming at him, he throws over it. He's 6'5". It's not hard for him. That is what he does, and he does it well. Russ is different. When he sees a different colored jersey, he looks to escape. And he, to me, looks long to short. So when he does escape, he looks long, 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 long. And then when pressure comes at him, he really doesn't think outlet first. And so, you know, let's not play this game. That's not, to me, his strength. We know his strength. It happened the first 10 years or 9 years or 8 years of his career, and it's play action. It can be quick game, but it's go ahead and we look for the big play. We run it. Maybe it's not Walter. Maybe it's just the scheme that doesn't fit him that well. And I think they're going to have to do a lot of soul searching and sitting down in the off season to decide what's the best way for us to win offensively. And, you know, we'll find out. But I don't think the relationship's bad. It's just, you know, we finally have a season we haven't won. It happens to every team. You know, you take a bit of a step back. And this season's not over. They may go on a run. But I think the relationship's fine, Mike. Michael.
I was going to say, there's two of us here. I know it's tough.
Yes.
Paul, before we let you go, really quick here, what have you seen out of Taylor Heinicke and this Washington football team that might make things challenging for the Seahawks?
Well, you know, he's played pretty well going back to last year. I don't want to say I'm really worried about them. You know, they don't have anything statistically that just jumps out at you. Other than, you know, they feel like they can win now. They don't have Chase Young, so defensively they don't have that big player. I don't think it has to do anything with Washington right now. This is all about the Seahawks and them just being confident that they can still win football games and make plays. And is it 3-7 record, as bad as we are statistically, both, I think, 30, 31st, you know, offensively, defensively right now. It's still just coming down to a few little things and execution and making plays. And I think once you get back to that, man, we have enough talent still to be very dangerous. And so hopefully it starts on Monday in Washington, because we definitely need a win. When you guys are talking about baseball before Thanksgiving, man, I know we've hit rock bottom.
That is true. What a dynamic. What a strange position to be in. But, yeah, hey, it's good from the Mariners' side. Maybe not so good from the Seahawks' side. But, Paul, thank you. We appreciate it. And enjoy the Thanksgiving and the good football that's on tap all this weekend.
I love it and can't wait for the Apple Cup, and also go Sun Devils. Big one for us. We can't lose to Arizona. You tell Rodgers that.
He's ducking you this week. He's on vacation. Maybe that's why.
Exactly. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
All right, thanks, Paul. See you.
Yeah, good football talk there. We have plenty more to get into. The Mike Salk Show here, presented by Jafco Plumbing. Michael Bumpus, Mike Lefko, we are going to break down a little bit more of Taylor Heinicke and this Washington football team. Is he the hottest quarterback in football right now? The numbers say he could be. That's next in the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.